come to order. Good morning. The Committee on Customer Service Operations and Safety. The agenda's been previously distributed. It's in front of you now. Are there any corrections or additions to the agenda? If not, I'll ask unanimous consent the agenda be accepted as presented. Hearing no objection, the agenda is accepted. The minutes of the June 25th meeting have been distributed. They are before you now. Are there any additions, corrections, amendments, questions on the minutes? If not, I'll ask unanimous consent that they be accepted as presented. Hearing no objection, the minutes of the June 25th meeting are accepted as presented. All right, we have three items on our agenda this morning. The first is the safety report. Good morning, Mr. Cato.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This morning, I'd just like to have our safety director to update the board, this committee rather, on the status of the accident investigation, what steps we've taken. It's also the urgent safety recommendation that came from the National Transportation Safety Board. So I'm going to ask Alexa Dupini Samuels, our Chief Safety Officer, to provide that information to you.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman. Good morning. And members of the committee.
Good morning.
First, I would.
This doesn't work that well.
Thanks. First, I would like to extend my well wishes to those remaining persons who were injured in the tragic accident and my heartfelt sympathies to those who lost loved ones. Today, as Mr. Cato mentioned, I'll update the committee on the information that's been released by the NTSB since our last meeting on June 25th. On June 25th, NTSB released the following information. The evidence of heavy braking, which led them to believe that the emergency stop button was depressed by the operator of the striking train. Also, they've begun nightly and daily testing at the accident site in the affected track area to troubleshoot to assist the authority on determining the root cause of the accident. They also collected recorded data from the struck train, which was train number 214, and is currently being investigated by their office in their laboratory in Oklahoma. The striking train did not have any onboard, as it was a 1000 series. The operator of the struck car, as you are aware, stated that he was in manual mode during his entire shift. On July 1st, NTSB also released that all of the components, i.e. the Wheezy Bond, wayside cables, train control system circuitry for the track segment between Tacoma and Fort Totten stations were being analyzed. Most of the working groups, as I mentioned last month, there are five or six different working groups that the NTSB has formed. Most of the working groups have concluded their on-scene phase, except for the signals group. As you are aware, on June 13th, the NTSB issued an urgent recommendation to the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority to address the need for adequate safety redundancy in the train control system and for us to also look at having real-time alerts for such a system. Also, they issued an urgent recommendation to the Federal Transportation Administration to advise all properties to evaluate their systems for the same redundancy. This concludes my report. Thanks.
Mr. Cato, how many systems in the country run on automatic train operations of some kind or another?
Do you know that number, Dave?
I do not know the exact number, but the FTA advisory letter is going out to all transit systems that run rail.
There's 47 systems that 47. Run rail. I can go upstairs and get a list. I know I have the list, but I don't know that number off the top of my head. But the overwhelming majority do. Newer systems that have been developed in the last 50 years or so. When you look at New York and Boston, except for segments of the Boston system, they do not run on automatic train control. Systems like Los Angeles, Miami, as well as Atlanta, they do have automatic train control. So again, there's 47 systems that have some form of rail operations. I would have to go look at my list and count them at the
time. That 47 includes light rail?
Yes, it does.
I was just trying to get an idea of the universe of systems with that might have a similar issue.
The universe in the United States is going to be probably all, it will hit all rail, light rail as well as heavy rail is what the NTSB's advisory requires them to take a look at their systems. But it also impacts systems around the world. This is not just something that's localized here in Washington or in the United States. The issue impacts systems in Canada, South America, Europe. In fact, they have been in contact with us to try to get information to determine where we are so they can inspect their systems. And so whatever comes out of this is going to have worldwide implications as we determine what the cause of this accident was.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons that I was interested in the question is in order to develop the kind of system that was announced this week, one question is, who else might have something, but also who else might need to buy something if it's a one-off. I mean, it's not commercially available and, may not exist at all, but obviously all the systems that similarly run on automatic train operations would be relevant to look at. Those that are manually operated, presumably this isn't the issue, but my impression is that's a limited number in this country. Light rail tends to run manually, doesn't it?
It generally runs manually.
Yeah, the majority, but there are systems now that are coming out with automatic, train protection on top of manual mode operation.
Okay, so, I mean, one level of the question is, who else can you talk to that's interested in this problem that, might have it? And secondly, if you're looking to buy something, or somebody's looking to sell you something, where else is the market? Which, if it's fairly limited in this country, brings in the international question. And that would be the next thing I'd be interested in, which is, given that there are worldwide quite a few such systems, urban heavy rail systems that run under automation, particularly in places like France where they do a lot of this, and as you know, run systems entirely automatic without operators at all in some cases, like in Lyon, which I visited some years ago, they may have dealt with this, and the question would be, has anybody in those countries created anything like what we're now going to have to develop?
Mr. Zimmerman, if I may, based on the current level and standards, throughout the United States, like Miami, Atlanta, Chicago, Toronto, BART, Los Angeles, some of Boston, some of New York, everybody's in a various stage. So I have begun conversations with some authorities as well as manufacturers over in the European market that we worked previously on other projects and stuff to get a better idea, understanding of what they are utilizing in the train control, capacity as well. At this stage, it really looks like this is going to be a grassroots effort, and it's going to be tailored and kind of specific to, each unique property. We're trying to look at standardization as much as that we can, but there is going to be a certain unique level. And then from a global perspective, it seems like our best area would be overseas, either in Europe or in the Asian markets that run these systems, because they do have automated systems, that are equal to what we have here, compared to other areas in the States.
Thank you. Committee members of questions, Mr. McKay.
Obviously and correctly, we've given NTSB unlimited access to our properties for doing their investigation. I was a little surprised yesterday that it appeared that within less than 24 hours notice, we were closing a station so that they could continue their investigations. Certainly understand that those things are going to happen and should happen. I guess I was surprised from our customer standpoint that we were left with less than 24 hours to communicate that a station was going to be closed. Is there any effort being given with NTSB to try to increase lead time when something significant like a station is going to be closed so that we can better get the word out to customers of that?
Yeah, if I could, first of all, the information, the way that it came out, I think it was misunderstood. Tacoma Park and Fort Totten are open. It's just that we're not providing, continuous rail service. So there, whenever I saw that, I did, make some comments to say that maybe we need to kind of correct that. We're just doing the normal. We required bus operations assistance for this bus bridge. reason why the urgency of this is because some of the original equipment manufacturers of some of this equipment have come on site, and they brought in some very, very key people. And so, you know, these folks are from all over the world. And so with us, you know, working with the NTSB, we had to show them, you know, priority on that to get this level of expertise, because it is truly very profound. The other component that we have been working with the National Transportation Safety Bureau on is what can we do to minimize our impact to our riders, you know, on a daily basis. So one of the things that we're looking at is, since our window of opportunity, shutting down at 11 o'clock is very disruptive, you know, for everybody. It strains our bus, you know, bus side as well, you know, the potential impact on that. So what we've kind of proposed is try to focus more so on the weekends. We know it's terrible for us to have to do this, but instead of us nightly having to have these issues, let this do this type of background troubleshooting investigative type of work, and then whenever we need to go out and do physical work, that we could do it on the daytime through the NTSB, and we can provide like a longer window on that as well. So we are looking towards like a Saturday, Sunday, where we shut down from 7 o'clock to 7 p. like this weekend we're going to be doing the site distance testing, and so what we're going to do is take advantage of that and stack some other work on top of that as well.
I appreciate that, and I think, you know, obviously our customers know there's going to be ongoing inconveniences. There's no doubt about that, as well there should be, to do the investigation. I just hope in the future there's a longer lead time, that's all.
I understand.
Our customers are very understanding of the inconveniences, but if we can give them advance notice so they can plan around them, I think they'd be happier.
Thank you.
Other questions? You had a regular safety report?
For the rail safety performance indicators, we continue to show downward trends for passenger and facility occupant injuries. On the current safety initiatives, we talk about the numbers are going down. So the question is, why are they? What are we doing better to enhance those numbers? We continue to do station inspections to recognize hazards. This is being done by our station managers and as well as other employees that walk the facilities. We also continue to make public service or passenger service announcements in the rail stations. As for the bus safety performance indicators, this also continues to show a downward trend, percentage change. Since we didn't haven't discussed this in some time, we kind of did a cumulative. So it's from June through May for each of the previous 3 years, and it shows you the actual change for those items. We've actually increased our Operation Lifesaver training in the area of public schools. Operation Lifesaver is a program by which we go out and we conduct outreaches with the local community and schools about railroad crossings and where our bus crosses the railroads, to have them aware of that hazard in that area. We've also done some improvements to our bus stops, such as increased Metro Access accessibility with the ramps for those stations, and also Metro Access has also shown a downward trend from last month to this month.
Can you go back to the first slide again?
Sure. Rail safety.
Report we had to reschedule because of a number of things we've had in the last couple of months, I guess.
Yes.
And, you know, with the great shadow of the terrible event of June 22nd, it seems hard to talk about safety and think about anything else. But the fact of the matter is, there is a lot else, and there is an operating system of rail and bus and paratransit carrying hundreds of thousands of people each day. And we have to focus on the many aspects of safety. And it is unfortunate that the events of June 22nd, in effect, overshadow everything else, including what has been a strikingly improved record on safety overall in the last year. And I think that, you know, we've been looking at these numbers. They're pretty impressive in terms of the quantifiable improvements that have been made. And this is something I know that when you came in, Mr. Cato, a little over 2 years ago now, that you put a focus on, and it is part of the regular work of this committee to monitor this and to understand what is being done to address these issues that have been of great concern, because in fact this is the number one issue at Metro and always has been, notwithstanding the recent tragedy. I would like you to tell us, Mr. Cato, a little bit about the things that you have been doing on both the rail and the bus side. And can you put up the bus slide again there, just for the next slide? I mean, those reductions, those are numbers we want to go down, and they've gone down in a pretty significant way. We talked a lot about this being an area for improvement when you came in 2.5 years ago, and obviously you've done a lot of work in this area. So could you just kind of summarize briefly the kinds of things that you've been doing and what you think accounts for the results that we've gotten here?
Well, first, thank you, Mr. Chair, but first I'd like to say obviously we need to redouble our efforts in our safety program, and not to continue to focus, but to focus even greater on that, both the rail and the bus segment of the organization. There's been many initiatives that's been taken. In the beginning, if you recall, just over 2 years ago, we brought in DuPont to help us with our safety program, to work with our safety department, our chief safety officer, as well as the assistant GMs of rail operations, bus operations, paratransit, and our administrative staff. And training has been a key component, but we still need to do more. Follow-up after accidents to determine the causes and to try to take actions to prevent those has been underway, but we still need to do more. One of the largest changes that I have seen has been in the support of our senior operators, as well as our frontline management employees who have been actively involved in interactions with all of employees responsible for operating our equipment, and working with them and being mentors, as well as following up, taking action when necessary, and in most cases, just showing people the right way to do things. So it's been the training, the mentoring, the support from DuPont, the chief safety officer, and her department that's been working, as well as, again, a continuous focus from all of us on understanding that our business is moving people, and that we have millions of people's lives and every day that we're responsible for, and we must do it in the best way possible.
Obviously, training, you mentioned a number of times there, is a large component of it. For some of those, that I guess that is easily understandable. I'm wondering, like, for things like the reduction in fire and smoke incidents, is that a difference in practice and therefore training, or is there
that's
a difference in equipment?
That's an equipment and practice, and it's a focus that we've taken, and let's remove the parts before we have a problem, and let's replace them with new parts that are not as fire, much of a fire hazard. I recall the first few months here and one day of having 4 reports all over the system of different fires, and that has dropped dramatically. And again, it's because of the focus and the effort on the part of our employees of maintaining that equipment. Are we there yet? No, it's a big system, but we're continuing to do that, and over time we think we will have even fewer. The issue of having debris on the right-of-way and removing that debris has been a key component of that. People, in spite of what they're supposed to do and not supposed to do, throw trash in our system, or newspapers are spread out and blow into the third rail, which causes smoke incidents or small fires. We're cleaning up as much as we can to keep up with that, and I commend the staff of our plants group as well as our rail operations and focusing on that. So it's a combination of really focus and replacement of parts, and I'm trying to keep the system a lot cleaner.
It's been a persistent problem over the years, and you know, that's why I think it's of interest that if you found a way to make an improvement on that, give some indication of what we need to do more of in the future to reduce those kind of things from happening, which are a real problem when we have heavy demand in the system. Questions from committee members? Mr. Shinkall.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Normally we see a crime report or a security report on the monthly reports like this, so there is none in the package?
No, we will be doing that, bringing it back after the August meeting in September. Or I think that we had discussion.
So that's not going to be every meeting?
Every quarter.
It's every quarter.
Every quarter, okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, Mr. Benjamin?
I just wanted to comment on my ride in this morning and my observation of the change in service between a week ago and now. I think staff has done a really, really good job of, I ride the red line, of taking the service and making it much more normal. Headways seem to be much more what people have expected in the past. Trains are crowded, but they're not as bad as they have been before. I think putting a few more trains on there and doing some turnarounds that you weren't doing before and moving in ways that are much more normal has had a very, very large effect on the quality of the ride for the passenger. It seems much more like what we've been used to. There are longer dwell times still at stations, and I don't think there's much you can do about that at this point. But I think you've done an enormous job between last week and this week. And I've observed that during the week, and you're doing well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is the reorganization of the bus division. Is Mr. Victoria presenting this?
I will.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're really excited about this. This has been a long time in coming as well. As soon as the slides get up there. Okay, if we can move to the next page. I wanted to make sure that I say a couple things about our mission and the next two lines after that, because our mission is in line with the corporate mission as well, and it's to provide the nation's best bus service. But you know, the operation of Metrobus is pretty complex, and we operate 1,500 plus buses in a 1,500 square mile operation with in all kinds of different traffic conditions, construction detours. My apologies. So while it's real complex to operate bus, we're always looking for ways to improve. And so this reorganization really represents only one part of the transformation taking place in the Department of Bus Services. In the future, what we plan to do is to inform you of some of the other things that we're doing to make to transform Metrobus into the new and improved Metrobus. There are no microwave solutions. This 35-year-old organization, bus, is actually 35 years old, and I wasn't surprised when I found that out last year. But it's very typical in its structure to most other transit agencies. It was disconnected to our mission. Our supervisory staff did not really supervise anyone, had no ownership in their work, and was not empowered to make a difference in the service that we provide. Actually, the bus operators reported to the division superintendent, which could have been as many as 500 to 1. So in the new organization, our service operations managers are assigned bus operators and routes. The proactive approach that we now take is the receiving of feedback from the front line on all aspects of the operation. On the next slide, basically what we did was we streamlined the operation on the left side. What you can see is that formerly there were seven layers between myself and the bus operator. The new organization on the right side reduces that by three. On the left side, the five positions that are highlighted in yellow were actually consolidated into one that you see on the right side, which is the service operations manager. Additionally, the general superintendent position, which is in green, was eliminated, and now all three of the assistant general superintendents, who are now directors, service directors, report to me. Previously, as I mentioned, if you asked an operator who they reported to, they would either didn't know or they said they reported to the division superintendent, which could have been as many as 500 to 1. So now they report to their own service operations manager and a part of a team of approximately 25. The service operation managers are now responsible and accountable for their assigned routes, which include the bus operators that pick those routes. They also have the authority and responsibility to ensure their routes perform at a high standard They're also empowered to work directly with the scheduling department to correct deficiencies and also work directly with our customers so that issues can be resolved more quickly. But as I said a little bit earlier, this is a 35-year-old organization. Nothing is perfect, and there's much training and culture changing still that needs to be done, and this is going to take quite a bit of work to do. The process and the next, I'll go through these very quickly in the next four pages and explain to you how those took place. Okay. Phase one, I worked with Gaylord Moffitt, one of our consultants, and developed a plan. Then we put together a team of people with different expertise from the organization, developed a charter with specific deliverables, with the focuses that you see there on the page. So through a series of exercises, the team came up with the behaviors, tasks, and knowledge necessary for the new service operations managers to be successful. Every person in the five positions that, have been consolidated underwent an assessment phase, which helped develop customized training for each individual. Standardized training was also developed to ensure that the basic skills and knowledges were covered. This is an ongoing evolution, and it will take several months to complete. These are skills that were not necessarily expected or trained for in the past, so it is going to take quite a bit of time to get everybody trained. The implementation phase, the first to be rolled out was District 3, which encompasses the three Virginia divisions. But what we found is between the first and the second rollouts, we made several adjustments as we learned the particulars and realized that some of the errors in assumptions that we had made. In April, we rolled out five divisions and left the largest for last. Bladensburg, which consists of over 500 bus operators, was the last, and it was necessary to split that division. What we're doing, in essence, is we're operating two divisions out of one location. As part of the second phase, we also began the personalized training for our managers, and among the management and leadership skills and techniques, we also included proper use of computers. We've installed laptops on all our scout cars, which our managers use for managing the routes they are assigned, and they're also using an outstanding tool, which we presented to you a month ago, which is NextBus. So this tool can be used very effectively for headway management, and also radio checks, history on the route, on-time performance, bus stop data, and a few other items that are very useful to our managers. So with that, what I'd like to do is ask our director of District 3, Ms. Ann Carey, who has been in the position of director also a short time, to come up and just give you a very quick overview of some of the successes that we've had.
Good morning, Ms. Carey. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you, Milo. And good morning, and thank you, members of the board, for allowing me to come up and talk about the reorganization. We did begin last summer in our reorganization process, and what we realized at that point was we had to take a really good look at ourselves as Metro Bus. We took a good look at our SOPs, our common practices, our policies, our tools, and our infrastructure, and finally our management style. And what we realized was that the management style that had been developed nearly four decades ago was not conducive to Metro Bus of today. So we began to change that. The path that we took was we decided to invest in our street supervisors, and we converted those street supervisors to service operations managers. We restructured the way that they did business, and we invested in them by providing them ongoing training. The training had begun last fall and is continuous. With our last division just rolling out in May, their training has just begun. We clarified our focus. We decided to focus on safety, reliability, and courtesy. And those are the three components that we demonstrate every day to our bus operators. We coach them on the street. There's much more interaction with our bus operators on a daily basis. And finally, we're starting to see some trends which we think are very positive. In Virginia alone, we're seeing the complaints start to go down. We still do get complaints, but we think the trend is very positive. We've just recently celebrated some success stories. And at Royal Street Division, we just celebrated 2 months of completely accident-free. So we're very proud of that. At 4 Mile, last month, the month of May, we had a 50% reduction in accidents over last year and also over April of 2009. And at West Ox, we maintained a very good safety record considering we've just gone through a major move and had several operators of low seniority move out to West Ox and cover new territories. We consider that a real success as well. So with me today, I did bring two of my teammates, Mr. Dale Fowler and Quincy Hines, to come and talk to you about what they've experienced. They are two of our new SOMs, Service Operations Managers, so I'd like to ask them to come up and just talk a little bit about their experience.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Service Manager Fowler. I've been with Metro for almost 22 years. I used to drive out of PG County. I've been over in Virginia for about 10 years now. And I just want to thank personally Mr. Milo Victoria for putting this in place, because personally, I think this is one of the best things that's ever happened with Metro as a frontline street supervisor. For what we have done in the past, it just didn't seem like we justified. That's another story, though. But it seems like now you really justify what we do now. The workload, it can be overwhelming at times with all the workload, doing office work, street work. But I try to tell the other service managers that this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And you're not probably going to see the bigger picture until maybe 2 to 5 years down the road. But we are definitely on the right track.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Quincy Hines, and I've been with Metro almost 29 years now. And, you know, every time you make a change, you know, there's some tweaking that has to be done. But generally, it's working pretty well in the sense that I really feel a connection with the operators, and rather than me being the bad guy, you know, I'm the guy that can help you out of a jam, you know, and so it's almost impossible to wash one hand without the other. So with this reorganization, that's basically what's happening. I need you just as much as you need me, and we're all connected. So that's basically it.
And another thing, like Mr. Victoria stated, when an operator has came to work in the past, he would get his manifest, be assigned a bus, and then leave the garage. He was on his own. We never really pretty much approached that operator out on the street unless he was involved in an accident, which on average was probably, I don't have the numbers, but it was rare on an accident, or a bus broken down. We never went up to check to see how an operator is doing. Now, with the reorganization, they assign operators to us, 25, 30, whatever the case may be. Now, I take pride in knowing that, okay, you know, your work reflects me. What you do reflects me. If you're not having no accidents, I tell my operators, I have three goals for them. I tell them, look, come to work every day. Now, I don't come to work every day, but that's a little smoke screen there. You know, come to work every day, don't have no accidents, and get along with your customers. If you do those three things, we can strive to provide the best night ride in the nation.
Okay, let me get that question.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for coming today and bringing this kind of report to us with hands from Mr. Fowler and Mr. Hines. I think that's like 51 years of experience between the two of And Mr. Fowler, you said you have a certain amount of pride. You have pride in what you do, and actually, you can hear that comes through loud and clear. And your presentation today gives us a better hands-on understanding of how the reorganization is working. And then, of course, the results that you've already provided in terms of the 2 months accident-free and the reduction of 50% in accidents, not only from the previous year, but from the previous month.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's measurable progress in a short period of time. And Mr. Fowler, you were talking about, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint, and the results will be, the long-term results will be discernible over an extended period of time, but you can see measurable results immediately. And I think it was very, very helpful to bring these to SOM, Service Operations Managers, here to give us a feel, and I commend both of you.
Thank you.
Wow, how refreshing the report this morning. As someone who has managed large equipment fleets in my career, I can't stress enough the importance of training and for middle managers and first-line foremen and supervisors. And I think this kind of streamlining has actually allowed you to do that. So I'm very excited about the streamlining effect of this. I would be interested at some point to find out whether we actually did reduce full-time equivalents as far as our full staff. But nonetheless, I applaud the effort to certainly provide this kind of training, and it's something that I've been pushing since I've been on the board for the last 2 years. So good work, and keep it up. And as you said, in the long run, it's the marathon we're running here, and hopefully we'll see even improved service and safety in the next 2 to 3 years. Thank you.
Ben.
Mr. Victoria, thank you very much for bringing your staff here to tell us how well this is working. They have already really responded in some ways to the article that appeared today in the Washington Post, but I wonder if you might want to expand on that any more and let us know how this is really working.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Just like with any time you make a change, there are going to be people who will quickly adapt, people who will embrace it, some who will be on the fence post, and some that are just not going to go along with it. Some that we need to really work very closely with to get them trained. A lot of what this change entailed, it is entailing and will continue to entail, is a lot of training and a learning curve. A lot of new equipment, technology, and so I can understand some people may not be happy with it. We have asked them to do a little bit more. They previously were street supervisors who basically didn't have responsibilities for people. They are now managers and have responsibility for not only people but also for the routes. So I can understand there were some are uncomfortable with it. And apparently there was someone who spoke with the Post and told them that. There was an additional comment regarding lack of coverage on a certain time and date. We checked into that. The allegation was that there were only three people in the area, and that there were two of them were busy and the other one couldn't be found. The fact is that there were 21 people on duty at that hour, and 9 of them were in the area. Secondly, no records show at all that any of those alleged calls were made to either transit, police, or bus operations control center. So I'm not sure where the information came from.
Thank you. It's as we both said, change is difficult. And any time you do change of this sort, particularly one that requires a cultural readaptation to different ways of doing things, there are those who find that a difficult change. I think the case that was made by the various people, looks like Mr. Fowler still wants to add to that, was a good one. So, Mr. Fowler, what else did you want to say?
I just wanted to add to Mr. Victoria in your question pertained to. Now, it's three districts. 1, 2, and 3 were out of Virginia. Now, our district was the first one that was
rolled in. Our district was the first one that started. So that was roughly 5 to 6 months ago. So Bladensburg, where the article came from, that was from probably a service manager, operation manager, and that district just recently has been rolled out within maybe 2 months. So it's still new to them. And every one of us, pretty much, it was changes. You get up in age, people don't want to go through that change, you know.
I know exactly what you mean.
We had some good people that senior street supervisor West, with 37 plus years, he had to defend himself a lot of times with new service managers, but the guy, he knew his stuff, his experience, he helped me. And another service, our old titles was street supervisors, now we're service operation manager. Then another service operation manager, he had 30 plus years, and he felt like Mr. Zimmerman might know his name, Mac Reel. Okay, Mr. Mac Reel went out sick, right? I mean, he felt like 30 some plus years. I don't want to go through this change, but he's back now. I guess he came around, and everything's working out pretty good now. So with Bladensburg, those people, I believe,
You think it's going to be okay when they get used to it.
And that's another thing. The old way, obviously the old way didn't work. Supervisors against operators. All right, we go out there, write them up. It didn't work. We were hitting people, running people over, accidents, this and that. But now you're going to see more interaction between the service managers and the operators. And I lost my train of thought.
But I do think you made a very good case for the fact that change is difficult. Not everybody accepts it right away. It took a while for you in Virginia to get to the point where you are now, and you appear to appreciate it quite a bit. And the other divisions will be able to do the same kind of thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm delighted to hear from the front line as to how this is working, and impressed over when I look at the chart as it moves to see what it really means. I wanted to ask, is there a closer working relationship with the customers? Because the experience I feel sometimes when I'm riding the bus, it's really refreshing to see someone else other than the bus driver there.
Let me say something about that. You know, another thing, they have provided us the tools now, the laptops. I'm still stuck in the 80s. I'm not an IT person. You know, I can't move around on the computer. But now, you gave us the tools, the laptop, you're training us. And that's another reason why people can't get to these calls, because we're in class. Once we get all up the, you know, the classroom training, we're understaffed, we'll be able to get back out on the street. We're always 3 or 4 people short over in Virginia, because why? We're in class. You know, half the force is in class somewhere. We're being trained now. We're being taught. And about the customers, I didn't like to go to West Falls Church Station or Boston. I mean, we have bullseyes on our back. You know, people are going to come up to us. You know, I'm approachable. People come up to me all the time. How do I catch the 28 bus? Do you know when the next 28 bus is coming? And then you call Central. Can you raise block Frank? Let me make this Apple Baker 53 block and see what is located. No bus assigned. We can't locate the bus.
But to answer your question, now that we have laptops and we have the next bus, you know, because a lot of times people would come.
That's where I was going with that. He trained me 10 years ago at the Paradise. So he took me under his wing, so we're okay.
So now that we have the laptops, if someone asks us where the bus is, we can give them more of an idea. And after they finish tweaking that, that'll be better too. So to answer your question, yeah, we can work closer, because like you said, we had bullseyes on us because we didn't have an answer when you came up to us and asked us. You know, because my thing was, I would say, if they asked me, I say, well, I could tell you a lie, but to tell you the truth, I really don't know, and that was the truth. So now I can tell you what time your bus is going to be there.
And they don't
you know, so that helps tremendously.
And tell a customer you don't know.
Right.
Metro's well, got the answer to everything.
And can I just add something to that? We've also trained all of our SOMs, our service operations managers, in the CRM program, which is our customer management tool. And during one of the first weeks of our rollout, one of our SOMs came to me and said, am I allowed to call this person? This is a customer. And I said, absolutely, please do. And so our SOMs are able to reach out to the public, and they're actually fixing an awful lot of errors that are maybe in a route or have to do with planning. And so they're coming up with solutions. They're getting back to the customers, whereas it used to be office managers and office supervisors might have 50 or 100 complaints on their plate. These SOMs have a very small amount and can get back to the customer very quickly and fix the problem.
Well, it's a closer working relationship, and I think that's very beneficial. I had another question regarding the reorganization part, and I don't know if it's information you can provide in the future, but I would really like to understand the span of controls and how they've shifted and where we see a change in the numbers of folks and what roles they're working in. For example, the number of service managers, the span of control of 25, et cetera, how we work through that with the reorganization that's taking place.
Actually, if you look at the levels of the organization, each service operation manager has 25 people that they're responsible for.
We put up page
right.
18.
Yes, go to the streamlining slide, please. Right. So the service operations manager has 25 people that they're responsible for with the routes. You know that on we have system picks every 6 months, so sometimes the people do change. The routes remain with the service operations manager. The idea is also that if you are a good service operations manager, you're going to have less turnover. Your team will want to stay intact. The service operations manager reports to the superintendent, and each superintendent, depending on the size of the division, has anywhere from 10 to 14 service operations managers reporting to him or her. So there are three service operations, superintendents in Virginia who report to Ms. Carey, three who report to Mr. Simon Cannon in District 2, and four who report to Mr. Leroy Jones in District 1. The reason there are four there is because Bladesburg is so large that we have to split it in two, and we are running basically two divisions at one location. And then the three service directors report to me. And I report to this guy.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Cato, I'm going
to try and put this in. I remember about a year or a year and a half ago, I'm trying to remember when this was, we were looking at the issue of the reliability of bus service and kind of how street supervisors were being used. And this was, again, earlier, in the early part of your tenure here. And you discovered something about the folks we had and what they could do and what they couldn't do that related directly to the management and supervision of the bus service. You want to?
Yeah, I do recall that discussion. It was a personal experience of observing a supervisor downtown on the D6 line. And basically what I found was that the supervisors did not have the authority to make change, that their job was primarily to report information back to their superintendents or to investigate accidents or other events. And it's from my experience, working with people who are providing services, it's far more effective if you have the ability to make their jobs easier or to make their jobs smoother, and that impacts our customers. So it's clear that our manager's service operations managers needed the authority to direct and assist operators, to be able to make changes to routes, to be able to make other changes necessary to improve the quality of our services. And in time, as these two gentlemen mentioned, there will be radical changes to how we operate. It's a far more effective customer-focused organization, and that's the business that we're in. It's been a long time getting to this point, but we're getting to that point.
This is, to me, this is really significant because for a lot of years that I was here and, you know, would come and say, how come we can't get the bus service more reliable? And the answer would be, well, we need more street supervisors, and we need to provide more street supervisors, and we thought that was supposed to take care of it. And it really wasn't until you got in here and went into it and had the perspective of somebody who's bus service, as you have before coming here, and you came back and said, well, it turns out these street supervisors basically don't have the authority to fix the things that we're trying to get fixed. And I don't think anybody had ever said that before. And, you know, I don't know if that's what part that played in your decision to do a major reorganization here, but to me that was a pretty significant aspect of the problems of the organization that we had, that, you know, we couldn't, even though we were appointing people that supposedly were supposed to address a problem, they actually didn't have the authority to fix the problem. And so I take it that with this new system, that's changed.
Yes, it is changed. They do have far more authority, which means they have far more work, in fairness. And their jobs is a lot harder than when it was before.
Amen.
And they have 25 people they're responsible for. But they have,
but they can now do what they're supposed to do.
They can now do what
they're supposed
to do. Yes.
So, obviously, and, you know, one of the gentlemen said, you know, any new system, it's going to take tweaks and things like that. And I'm sure you're going to have to be continuously evaluating this as you go forward and implement it to make adjustments. It's not all going to be right the first time out.
That's absolutely true. That's, you have to make adjustments as you learn, and the feedback we would get from these managers. And we have to give them the tools to do their jobs. And we're fortunate to be able to give them the next bus system, which will develop even into greater information that they can use as they manage their employees and improve the quality of service. But over time, again, they will adjust to this point, and then there will be another level that we will adjust to and give even more authority to make changes. And you will see continuous improvement coming out of bus operations as a result of them, and also as a result of other changes which we will talk about at the regular board meeting. This has not been just a one-step approach. This has been a comprehensive look at what works and doesn't work, and how do we structure it to work, and how do we develop the people to do that work, and what their responsibilities and accountabilities are, and as well as the people they report to. Who are they? What do they focus on? What are their skill sets? There's been huge changes that ultimately, again, the focus will be better service to our customers. Will it change everything by tomorrow morning? No, but I think a lot has changed since last week and the month before and then 6 months before that. And so you will see radical changes and the responsiveness to our customers of things that happens in the film.
And so, finally then, ultimately, the way, you know, the proof is going to be in, you know, what happens and how we measure it. And that's really my question then. How do we ultimately evaluate this? You have, you know, performance measures that we've been using for some time. We've talked a lot about them. Ultimately, isn't the success or failure of this effort to be found in what happens in those performance indicators over time?
Yes, and that's a very key point that you bring up, and something we will be talking about in the very short future. We're also using existing resources, created a department of performance measurements, a really basic operational and agency performance that will address everything that we do, so we can measure, here's where we are, here's where we want to go, and here's where we were in the past, or and what the issues are. It would not just look at numbers, but it will drill deeper down to try to find out why is this going in a certain direction, and how we, what changes we need to make, to move the agency. But you're right, the ultimate test is our customers. The ultimate test will be, are we on time more? Are we have fewer complaints? And complaints help. I mean, they sound negative, and I don't like to have complaints, but they help us change our services if we listen and truly do something. And ultimately, that gets into a broader perspective as an agency of what we need to do to expand capacity in this region, and is to provide bus services that some people say that are comparable to rail. I think we are getting there, and it will be just as convenient as rail, because that's ultimately the solution to some of the mobility problems we have. So every little piece is parts of a puzzle, of a picture that we're beginning to paint, of a new services, of an enhanced metro bus services for this region, and working with our partners. And there's many things going on, as you are well aware of, at a higher level, but they're all connected. Everything we're doing is connected.
That's very helpful. I do want to emphasize, though, that I think it's important to establish a baseline for, you know, the performance, how you're measuring it now, and be able to then see over time how it changes, and be able to say, you know, we implemented this change, and we're seeing that reliability, as by these measures, has changed by this percentage in the right direction, the wrong direction, whatever it is, you know, in all these areas. I think establishing that baseline is really important, so that we know how we measure success a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, because I do agree that the real effects will show over time. In the short run, it's going to be painful because change is hard, and it's, you know, difficult when you're changing practices people have been used to for a long time, and some of it's not going to seem like it makes sense. And in fact, there are going to be mistakes, because you're doing something new. You make mistakes, even if the overall effort is the right one. You're still going to have little aspects that, oops, we need to fix that. And so to stick with it, we have to have some way of, you know, really showing people, not just on the outside, but on the inside as well, see, this is why we're doing this, because you can see the results. And I hope you'll establish that baseline and also, you know, share it with the committee at appropriate intervals so we can monitor the progress.
We will, sir.
Mr. Zimmerman, if I can add something, too, is based on the conversation you and I had. Mr. Fowler, I think that was apropos. I think that is when you said it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Mr. Cato mentioned the puzzle. What we plan to do is each month bring to the committee some phase of the organization, so you can see each month how this bus reorganization has improved and the effect it has on our customers, more and more importantly. But we have started to see that change now. We see the new change in the buses that are on the street now. Presentation we did with Next Bus was kind of a start and a lead-in. We're going to come back next month and talk about Next Bus, its first phase, so to speak, to see how things we're doing. I often kid with Mr. Victoria and said this is the start of our television series where we paint the picture and tell everyone how we start and where the reorganization is taking us. So I think you can see the excitement from the service operation managers. You have the directors sitting out in the audience here, that everybody's excited about this. And I just wanted to say a tribute to Mr. Victoria and his staff, because they really worked hard. And the general manager had a vision, as you mentioned, when he came in. And he elbows me a lot when he has that vision that you got to go out and do some things. But this is an exciting time. And having one-on-one conversations with you as well, I know the times you told me, you know, there's the rail side of the house, but don't forget there's bus, too. So I think you can see that everybody right now was focused exactly on that.
That's great. Ms. Curry, if I'm not mistaken, you've been in this system a long time ago. I think you may have left the area and come back.
Well, I've been in transportation for 25 years.
I remembered it was quite some time. So you've seen a lot of the change here, and I was struck by the three words you mentioned that I trust would be a mantra: safety, reliability, and courtesy. I think that pretty much sums up the things that people care about in that order, but all three really important in everything we do. So I take it that is what you're emphasizing with people that you now supervise.
Most definitely. It is our mantra. We say those words every day. We say them often. And I think that from my staff, every one of us has that passion in our belly, and we want to make this work, and we want to make Metrobus really fantastic. And I think we're getting there. We're approaching it as the Disney World of DC.
Mr. McKay.
Yeah, I want to thank you, Mr. Zimmerman, for the last point you brought up about the on-the-ground manager who has the authority to make decisions. And let us not forget about the relationship they have with the bus operators. We didn't talk a lot about the bus operators, but I would think if you're a bus operator in the old system, what might be enormously frustrating is to raise a point about your route where you run into problems on a daily basis where you might see a water main being replaced that's going to take a month, and you suggest maybe if we go around that a block, we can save a lot of time. To raise those issues with someone who doesn't have the authority to make that decision over time, you probably throw your arms up and say, what's the point? Now, under this organization, it appears at least that a bus operator can go directly to an SOM, make a recommendation about their route to help improve reliability, and you'll have the authority to evaluate that and take action on the spot before the water main construction is done and somebody finds out about it. And so frustration is always that bus routes in an area like this, where you have congestion, where you have construction, where you have other things happening, need to have the flexibility to make changes on the ground to make more effective, lest you wait long enough going through what appears to be a much more bureaucratic, long-winded process to get a change made. I'm sure over time that becomes frustrating. And so your relationship with the drivers, I think, will be a key to making this successful, at least in improving the reliability component of it.
I think that's the last word.
Can I just make one comment? Mr. McKay, you'll be happy to know that we just put together an excellent team to work specifically on the Rex line. We expect a report from them tomorrow, so I'm sure you'll start to see some great improvements.
Good. Thank you.
I'll say that so far I'm loving NextBus. I don't know what people's experience is, but I didn't run to my bus stop this morning because I knew that there was another one a minute behind the one I could see going by ahead of me.
Good.
Made for a much calmer entry.
When you're calmer, I'm happier.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
There are still two phases. If you like, for the interest of time, we can report on them next time as part of the next episode.
We'll be back talking about this more. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one more item on our agenda. It concerns the, back on the rail side this time, the station enhancement program. Mr. Cato, you have...
Yes.
So Mr. Gillum's going
to... Mr. Paul Gillum.
About this?
Really.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Paul Gillum. I'm the Director of Plant Maintenance. I have a couple of guests with me this morning I'd like to introduce. Connie Williams, the Assistant Director. Bernie Nolan, who started this program in 1991 and has been with it ever since and been kind of the person that has kept moving it forward. If at any time today you're unhappy with anything I present, please hold one of the two of them accountable. But beginning on the handout, page 2, page 28 of the overall handout, the purpose of this presentation is to provide an overview of the authority's station enhancement program. This program is managed by the Office of Plant Maintenance. A little background. The Metrorail system was opened in 1976. So our stations in the original phases have been in service for 33 years. The station enhancement program was initiated in April of 1991. The purpose of the program is to restore the appearance of our stations. When the program started, the goal was to complete major enhancement at 10 stations per year. The goal is currently 12 stations. In July of 2000, the program was expanded to include many enhancements. The current goal is to complete 12 each year. By completing 12 major and 12 mini enhancements annually, the condition of each Metrorail station is restored every 3.75 years. Next page. The station enhancement team has 75 staff that includes 21 heavy cleaning machine operators, because this is the only heavy cleaning done at our rail stations, 22 surface finishers for painting and rebronzing, and carpenters, welders, sign fabricators, masons, and other crafts. The capital budget for this program is just under $7.5 million. Mini enhancement tasks. During the mini enhancement, we clean the masonry surface, which includes pressure washing the entrances, passageways, parapet walls, track bed walls, and exterior canopies. We hose the coffers, and clean the escalator, elevator, metal housings. We paint interior surfaces, which includes the entrance gates, windscreens, kiosks, fare gates, telephone booths, mezzanine and passageway ceiling tiles, and doors. We repair metal components like platform shelter and bus shelter metal parts, map cases, coffer panels, restroom panels, station doors, and drainage and ventilation grates. We also repair the interior masonry surfaces, including concrete, paver tile, and granite paver stones. We paint the exterior surfaces like the parking lot and lollipop light poles, the bus shelters, signposts, bike racks and lockers, parking booths and curbing. We fabricate and install and repair signs on the pylons, doors, kiosks, track receptacles, parking lots, and bus shelters. We refinish bus and station platform shelter benches by resurfacing the wooden benches and applying clear coating. We spot finish bronze surfaces, which are the escalators, elevator housings, cabs and doors, entrance pylons, and handrails. During a major enhancement, the following tasks are performed in addition to those identified in the mini enhancement. We pressure wash the coffered ceilings and walls, and we paint the interior surfaces, meaning the coffer panels, ceiling panels, and track bed grates. And these are just pictures of us actually doing the work that you'll see there. Major versus mini. The major enhancement takes about 3 months, which is approximately 25% longer than a mini enhancement. In other words, it takes about 12 weeks to do a major enhancement, about 9.5 weeks to do a mini. Time spent in each station will vary depending upon our entrances, vary from 1 to 4 at a station, the platform configuration, whether it's center, side, split, or bi-level, whether it is above ground or below ground, and of course, obtaining track rights and access to the station itself. Challenges. Cleaning station walls. You can clearly see in this picture where we have pressure washed and where we're about to pressure wash. Clear delineation between before and after. This is caused by the concrete dust and the brake dust generated into a station. So every 3.75 years is the only time these stations are going to really get a thorough wash down, and that's the difference between before and after. We also rebronze the elevators, the escalators, exterior pylons, and handrails. And, of course, that then becomes the famous Metro Brown. Now, the famous Metro Brown, everyone thinks magically happened. It's actually a four-step process. Now, I'll put it this way so I can show you it in order. We receive brass panels. We cut them and form them to whatever shape we need for the fabrication. We then must sand and remove the oxidation of the panel. We then perform an acid wash and stain the panel. We then put a clear coating over the panel. Four-step process, famous Metro Brown, that which we're known throughout the world for. And this is the way that that is accomplished.
Some might think it's a lot of work to turn something from brass into brown, which in other places they might be tuned to do the opposite.
You know, actually, the reason we do this is for longevity. If we were to paint one of these objects, we would be painting every couple of years. Actually, this rebronzing allows us to get to 4 years and longer with our exterior surfaces by using this rebronzing technique.
So it holds up better.
It really does hold up better. I mean, compared to paint, it's night and day.
Well, how about compared to brass and to what you start with?
You know, I'm a third generation employee. I like the Metro Brown. But then again, I'm an old school. But it all depends on what you want, sir. We'll do whatever they put forth.
I just like
challenges. We have to restore the deteriorated and corroded bus platform shelters. Over the course of 3.75 years, these shelters do receive a lot of abuse, particularly late into the evenings. And, of course, we must cut out the bad parts, replace them, and bring them back to newer condition. Further challenges. Replace faded and damaged signs, and of course replacing broken tiles. And a lot of people don't realize the scope of the work we face. We maintain more than 127,000 500 signs and graphics in our system. That's a lot of signs and graphics.
Say that again.
127,000.
500.
Matter of fact, I have a listing of the 63 major signs that we have to maintain, along with the type and all that, for anyone who would ever want to look at it. It's just voluminous.
I'd suggest people, board members may also at some point, if they haven't had the chance, want to go to Carmen Turner facility and see the shop that has to do all these things. And it's impressive to see the operation.
We appreciate that. And, of course, that's the reason sometimes our head spins when people talk about making changes, because what we relate that to is the amount of signs that have to be changed to make what most people consider a very little change. But for us, it's a very voluminous change.
That was explained to me when I last made my visit.
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Here's what we had to do.
We haven't had a chance to try to educate the rest of the board members yet, but we appreciate that. Also, we maintain 2.6 million square feet of paver tiles. And what most people don't understand is that's equivalent to 20.5 miles of a dual-lane roadway. That's how much paver tile we have in this system that we maintain day in and day out and try to keep it good working order. Just some examples of work in progress. Again, we're rebronzing the escalator. We're doing some paint work. We're rewelding a shelter. And, of course, we're painting the poles out in the parking lots. On the next page, we just wanted to review with you. I won't go through them and bore you with them. But these are the stations that we completed in 09 as far as major enhancements and mini enhancements, and 24 were done. It's important to note that we consider four stations to be actually dual stations, and that's LaFont Plaza, Gallery Place, Metro Center, and Fort Totten, and that's because they're just so voluminous that we actually count them as two stations, so that when we do them in upper and lower level, so there's actually 90 stations in our program versus the 86 that you normally think of. On the next page, you'll see our FY10 schedule. There is a typo in there. The Shady Grove is receiving a mini enhancement. It should not be under major enhancement. It should be West Falls Church is actually where we'll be doing the major enhancement. So you could make that change. Mm-hmm. Between a mini and a major?
That's
basically just the painting and cleaning of the coffered ceilings. In other words, the ceiling. And we showed you a picture there. I hope one of the things that you were able to take away is just how much work it is for us to get those big pieces of equipment onto the platform to be able to reach the ceilings in order to do the pressure washing and the painting of each of those little coffer panels. What a coffer panel is that little panel that sits into the cement coffer. And, of course, that's for sound attenuation. And to get up there and paint that is very time-consuming, and that's the major difference between a mini and a major. We believe that there are significant customer benefits to the station enhancement program. First of all, it preserves the authority's investment. It helps to restore the station to its original character. It improves the customer's perception of the system. It serves as an important component of our service delivery package. It identifies and corrects potential safety concerns. And, of course, it supports Metro's strategic goals. So, any
Thank
questions?
That certainly, I think we all would agree with those points. Let me ask you specifically, there are many features of the system that are that come from its initial design. Between, Harry Weiss and Jackson Graham, they decided certain things, and that's the way they are here, including the famous brown, which I've heard attributed in various ways, but may have something to do with the service that the first general manager came from. But in any case, some of those things are just major design features that have been kind of dictated from the beginning. And some are things that have been a little more flexible. The station design itself, the vaulted ceiling is a signature feature, but the coffers vary from the older stations with sort of many coffers to newer ones in which the design was in some way simplified. In appearance anyway, and I assume there's different, what you have to do to maintain those, the work you have to do is different. Those coffer panels are different from, let's say a station on one of the oldest parts of the Red Line to the, if you go farther out on the Red Line to, help me out here.
Forest Glen.
Well, I wasn't even thinking that new. I think if you just go out to Bethesda or Friendship Heights, they're different than they are at DuPont Circle, let's say.
Mm-hmm. One thing plant maintenance understands, we have, for instance, 40,000 pieces of equipment that we maintain throughout the system. much of it's different from location to location because it's put in a different time by a different manufacturer. We're very used to going into a station and knowing the characteristics and what's in that station, and we have to adapt to that. So we think we do that very well. You're right, there's not a lot of consistency. The one that gives us the most trouble and that we're really making efforts to improve is tile. When we go into a station to replace tile, for instance, tile thickness will vary significantly from station to station depending on the manufacturer and who did the installation. Now, you just think we're going to go in there and bust it up and replace the tile, but guess what? What we find is when we go in there and start busting it up, we don't have that particular tile. We got to go back and have a special order run and made in order to fix that station. So we try to now stock a lot of that. One of the great things that Mr. Cato and Mr. Francis and Mr. Requa have done, and Mr. Couch in particular, is we're going to be moving away from some of that tile, which we were famous for, to a concrete paver. It's going to give us a lot of advantages as far as maintenance. It's going to give us a lot of advantages as far as coefficient of friction, which will reduce the number of, I don't want to use this word, but
slips.
Coefficient of frictions. I don't use the word slips here. But yeah, it's just a lot of advantages to us from a maintenance standpoint and from an operational standpoint. And those are the kind of things that I think we're really looking at now, trying to decide what is the history of Metro. Where do we need to go just to keep the system improving and getting better and doing things we want to do?
In terms of where these things fall, you know, these two types of enhancements, where do enhancements come in that, well, let me give you an example. One of the important things here is cleaning the interior of the stations. We have some stations that a number of years ago were whitewashed, where the basic concrete fixtures were painted white. And they did a few, and then they didn't do any more. It's always been my perception that those are a lot brighter. I like them, and I've watched them over the years, and they seem to hold up pretty well. But we didn't do any more of that. I think the last one was done before I was even on the board, so it's been plenty of time. What kind of enhancement is that?
We had seven stations that we performed that on. They were Stadium Armory, Potomac Avenue, Eastern Market, Federal Center, Capitol South, Farragut North, and Archives. Those seven stations were done as part of an initial program. Unfortunately, the product that we used is no longer available to us because due to the new going green, and we're not allowed to use that product, and there's really no product that we found that would substantially hold up. But you're right. There are seven stations. When you go into them, you're going to see a significant difference in the brightness of the station because they were painted. Now, one of our problems is that once we start that, and if we were to start it going into more stations, is it takes a lot more to paint it, that entire station. And then, of course, now you've got the upkeep problem. So the biggest challenge we face is just trying to keep the station enhancement program alive as it exists today. But we would have to seek additional funds if we wanted to do more with the program and things like paint the stations. But you're right. If you go to those seven stations, you're going to form an opinion. And it can be discussed. And
well, this is one that for 10 years here now, I've been saying, gee, I'd like to see us do more of that. And the answer is always, it would cost some money to do, which I agree. But it's also an example of the kind of thing, Mr. Cato, for which I thought it would be appropriate if we have new advertising initiatives and we get some money for that, putting those kind of things directly into amenities that benefit the consumer, the person who's in the station. This is the kind of thing that I think we ought to be looking to do more of. I also wonder about, on the environmental side, one of the trade-offs is with what you're paying to light the things. Because, we can brighten up the station by turning up the electricity, or we can brighten it up by making the surface more reflective and getting, more light, more ambient light from the same amount of electricity that we're using now. I hope that is something we'll be able to look into in the future as we make improvements, because those kind of things do affect the way people perceive the system. And I think a lot of our stations are a bit dark. So with that, I'll turn to my colleagues for any questions they may have. Ms. Hutchinson.
Just finishing up on your point, the question I wanted to ask is have we changed our lighting, the type of lighting for the ceilings? For example, you can walk in some stations and suddenly it is brighter and it does feel better. And is that because of the more efficient? Or is simply the regular lighting has a cycle for changing has occurred? And how does that all fit into the larger piece of this when you're making these many or other enhancements as to making those transitions if they're needed?
You know what? Lighting is not part of the station enhancement program.
Not at all.
Lighting at all of our facilities is managed by TSSM, Mr. Kubitschek, and he can speak to the improvements that they have made, and they have done some significant things, but it is not part of the station enhancement program. Matter of fact, we work very hard not to destroy his work. His speakers in general, because, you know what, we use very, very high pressure washers to try to get, because I don't know if you've seen some of the calcium deposits that we get on the walls. Yeah. We have to get those off, so we're using very, very high pressure. We use that on the wrong place, and we've got significant problems with the lighting and the speakers and everything else. So we spend a lot of time covering them and having to uncover them when we leave the station that night, just in order not to hurt the things that we need to keep maintaining in the station.
We are looking at different types of lighting, fluorescent. One of the things that I found out whenever I first got here is that we really did not monitor the type of bulbs that we were buying. There's a difference, and so we were getting mixed match of bulbs. And then also from an energy efficient standpoint, there are more efficient ones out there. The other item that we are looking at is we've been started being approached by a lot of vendors about the use of LED lighting as well. And so that might be one of the things that we look at moving forward. The other component was also figuring out what was best on our maintenance, because they used to go through and we would get behind because they would only change out, they would have a specific program, and then the rest of the stations were kind of left behind. But I felt like on our part, we needed to keep up the lighting across the board, and then if we needed a major campaign, then we would establish a separate effort. So it's very, the big thing has been the change of the bulbs and the attention of what we're doing, and then also whenever Mr. Gillum and them do go through there and they clean up the ceilings and everything else, it makes a big difference. It does make a big difference.
I just want to ask the question, or maybe repeat what I repeated the last time regarding informing our public about these improvements, because I think it is very difficult to make the distinction as a user when something is under repair, construction, operational changes. And I just think it is a good message to say what you're doing and why you're doing it. And it seems like there could be a few signs from your shop maybe created that really would acknowledge that, because we're going through the Vienna, I guess it's the canopy that may be going on there. And every time I go through the construction, I think the customer has no idea why all of the inconvenience is occurring. And it is inconvenient. But they may have a different atmosphere about what's happening if they could be told that they're looking for just a major improvement that's going to occur there. And that tells us about what's happening to the customer, not just why we're walking in the driveway of the bus station right now, the transfer station right now, because you're doing some major work. I think that's the case to me, I think, with all of that, because that's the relationship that you're trying to build with the customers. And I think it's a good news piece that we're making investments, and they should recognize those investments that we're making.
Mr.
Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to commend Mr. Gillum and his staff. They're the heroes that you don't see out working a lot of times. They work early in the morning and cleaning out our stations and keep this system in a state of good repair. Last Friday, there was a luncheon, which we have a small luncheon every month, to recognize outstanding employees. And one of his supervisors, Al Carter, was there. And his testimony about the pride that he has in his job is an indication of the great leadership that Paul has. And getting his employees to focus from a customer service standpoint to keep the system looking as clean, to look modern, and also it helps us in the longevity of the system itself. Also, I just want to commend him in very difficult economic times. Paul needs more, and he has not been able to get more in the last few years, but he stayed focused on using his resources wisely, again, to do the job that he's committed to do, and it's a personal commitment on his part and his employees, and I just want to tell the board how much I appreciate it and let you know how important he is to this agency. Hopefully going forward, as we get additional funds for capital programs, we need to focus. We really do need to focus additional dollars to his area to improve the work that he's doing. And so I just want to publicly thank you for the work that you do and that your employees do.
Mr. Gillum, as I recall, you've been with this business for a while, but aren't you also from a family tradition of transit?
You know, I've been in the business 43 years. I started when I was 16 at AB&W. Worked my entire time. I was in college, went to the University of Virginia, worked here, and then worked for AB&W, then for Metro. I graduated with a master's. I started here as a bus cleaner. Worked my way up as a mechanic, first line supervisor, up through the system. Served in bus for 21 years. Been back with the authority 35 wonderful years. My father was the superintendent of shops for AB&W and then the first superintendent of power for Metro. My grandfather was a streetcar operator, and my son is an elevator and escalator mechanic, carrying on the tradition, and love the service of public transit. Been great to our family, and it's a great place to work.
Well, thank you for all you do for Metro and for our ride.
Thank you, sir.
There are no further questions. Mr. Ann.
I just want to say, and we like your glasses.
I know.
I was trying to make out who made them, because, but I, my own eyesight isn't that good.
Well,
yeah, those are the shoes that I buy. Thank you very much. Can I impose? We have a couple of minutes, and nature abhors a vacuum. And can I? And I just couldn't get here this morning for the discussion about the. Can I just ask one question of the general manager?
If you prefer to do that rather than in the board meeting, which...
Well, we can't start until 11.
Right.
It's 11:15. I can see that. Mr. Cato, have we had any direct contact with... You know, there has recently surfaced the former employee at BART who holds the patent, and I keep hearing that you know, here's the answer to our issues regarding the latest urgent safety recommendation from NTSB. Have we been in contact with this individual?
I have not personally been in contact with that individual. Today I got a copy of a drawing of his solution to our issue. We will contact anyone who has recommendations on what we need to do and how to build the system necessary to give us the safety redundancy. But having said that, we need to make sure we follow the right process and to make sure whatever we procure and whoever we have working on this system have met certain tests. I'm not saying that individual has not. We will consider his recommendations along with the dozens of others I'm receiving in emails. I didn't realize there was that many companies who could develop rail safety systems until the NTSB made that a requirement. Now I'm inundated with companies all over the world who can do this, and so we will take very serious his talents and look at that possibility. Having said that, as I said, we must make sure whatever we put in here works and works well.
That's great. But we're open to all.
Yes.
You know, everything that we need to do to move as rapidly as possible.
Yes. This is not going to be a long-term process.
Right.
Process. This is going to be a necessary short-term,
right.
But our direction is to move and get the system in place.
We don't meet in August. At least I'm not going to meet in August. Can we have a report on all of this?
Oh, absolutely.
Speaking of which, our next meeting will be on September 24th. We have a number of items. I'm sure this will be high on the list. There will also be an update on NextBus, which I think will be interesting for the experience of having operated the summer then, as well as, of course, operational and safety and security reports. And I believe we're going to have this year's Secret Shopper folks coming then as well. I believe that concludes the business of this committee for this morning. Mr. Chairman, you'll be convening in about 15 minutes next door. I'll take that as a yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Can we meet before 11? We can't meet legally before 11.
No, we've advertised for 11, so we should start. Hopefully.
If we started early, we'd be done soon.
You're the chairman, but this meeting's adjourned.